live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
We'll go back first, about 24 hours, right back to before last night's massacre. Back to when people were complaining about another Clemson-Alabama matchup. Back to when Dana Holgerson came on this program. He called that game yesterday a coin flip when he was on this show. When he said it, it seemed kind of charitable to Clemson. You know, back to when Vegas was not giving an undefeated Clemson team a lot of love against Alabama. In fact, Vegas was not giving Clemson any love at all. Almost nobody was. Remember that time. Remember 24 hours ago. All right? That was then. Let's go to Alabama's first possession of that game last night.
Again, Tagovailoa going to throw, throws, and it's picked! Picked at the 45-yard line. It's going to be returned for six.
Boom!
Tagovailoa gets picked, and it's returned by A.J. Terrell for six. Oh, what a play for the Clemson defense.
So what did you think last night when you saw that? You thought, holy crap. That was a holy crap moment. So the comparisons to boxing are pretty much overdone, but that really was to affect coming out and landing a huge haymaker in the first round. Dabo talks about dominating the moment. Clemson dominated that moment in just about every single moment that followed. But more on that in a moment. Let's get back to that pick for a minute. Tua does not make mistakes like that, and Alabama does not fall behind like that, at least not that quickly. But the Tide fumbled around on the mat for their mouthpiece, and then they found it.
Here's Tua now. He's got Josh Jacobs behind him. Play action fake. Tua loads up, looks long, tries to find Jerry Jeudy. He's got it. He'll break a tackle. He's going to go in. Touchdown, Alabama. 62 yards right back at you. And Alabama is within a point.
Alabama Radio Network on the call. So just like that, it was on. It was on. 62 yards from Tua to Jerry Jeudy. Bama bounced back, as you'd expect that they would. A seriously impressive response from Tua. Because three plays later, Trevor Lawrence hits T. Higgins for 62 of his own. Travis Etienne scored on the next play. And like that, it was on yet again. And then Alabama responds with a 10-play, 75-yard TD drive. And that was the moment that everybody who wanted this matchup. And for all you dopes who were complaining that you didn't want that matchup, you look pretty foolish. I mean, there was so much action. There were so many huge plays. Not even the biggest hater could hate that. I mean, worst thing ever, that was the best thing ever. And nobody anywhere could dispute that. These guys are standing in the middle of the ring. They're trading haymakers. It looked like the best thing ever. At that point, in Clemson-Bama 4, I would have signed up for 5 more years of that. Hell, give me 15 more years of that. At that point, let's just keep going. Because it does not get any better than that. What I'm talking about at that point was the greatest Alabama team ever. And a Clemson team that was not only not afraid of them, but was standing in and talking junk and backing it up. But then Bama missed the point after. And in that moment, it seemed huge. It seems crazy that for all the talent that Alabama has, that for as dominant as that program has been, Nick Saban cannot recruit a kicker. He can recruit 5 stars everywhere else on the field, but the guy can't find a kicker. And it happens over and over again. And maybe this was going to be the time that it would come back to haunt them. Spoiler alert, it would not. Alabama chased out with a field goal. That made it 16-14. Remember that score, because that was the last time that it was close. Clemson had a pair of TDs bookended and another Tua interception. If the pick six was the worst pass of Tua's career, then that second pick was even worse. 31-16, halftime. And if that game wasn't over then, it was most definitely over on the first series of the half. The second half, because that's when Nick Saban, who looked like he was coming apart at the seams in the first half, then completely melted down and imploded. 4th and 6 at the Clemson 22. He sends out the field goal unit. Go ahead and roll it.
Snap, hold, and they're going to fake it. Jones going to run it. Right side, again, hit and dropped by Niles Pitney. They try to run the fake, and Pitney smelled it out and just stuffed it at the 22-yard line.
Tigers Radio Network. Tua had already made the 2 worst passes of his career, and that may have been one of the worst calls of Nick Saban's career. a fake field goal run when Clemson was all over it. It wasn't just that Clemson's defense was waiting for that. The entire world was waiting for that. As I tweeted last night when it happened, it's not a fake if everybody knows it's coming. Then it's just a horrible rushing play. The worst rushing play ever. And instead of picking up 6 yards, they were never going to do anyway, they lose 2 yards. And at that point, Saban admitted to his team and the world that he was desperate, that he and they were totally overmatched, outclassed, did not belong on the same field with Clemson. Clemson knew it. Everybody knew it. At that point, that game was over. And the only thing that's worse than desperate is dumb and desperate. The Nicktator going gimmick, and not just a gimmick, but a stupid gimmick, an obvious gimmick. It was embarrassing. Really embarrassing and not at all surprising. And then 3 plays later, Trevor Lawrence did this.
Lawrence asks for the shotgun snap, gets it. Back to pass. Going to throw, have it complete at the 40 and turn it upfield and headed for the end zone. Will be, and it'll be a touchdown. Justin Ross, as Alabama's corner went down, and it looked like he may have
blew a knee or something,
and Ross got open and takes it to the house for 6.
Ball game beatdown. Ball game beatdown, because at that point, Clemson could have named their score. If they wanted 50, they could have had that. If they wanted 60, they could have done that too. That's how dominant they were. They called off that fight at 44-16 when they were driving and they decided to remove their starting offensive line and Trevor Lawrence from that game. Think about that for 1 second. In the national championship game against the alleged greatest team ever, Dabo literally had the time to take his starting offensive line and his starting quarterback out so they could get a standing ovation. That's how dominant that was. That's how good Clemson is, and that's how brutal that beating was. Rarely is a beatdown really a beatdown. People normally say that as an exaggeration or hyperbole, but in this case, that was more than a beatdown, more than a hospital job, more than a curb stomping. I mean, I don't even have the phrase at this point to describe what that was. So go ahead, pick your over-the-top metaphor, and it will probably fit right there. Clemson just knocked Alabama the hell out. It was, to quote the late, great Pat Tillman, a nice, swift ass-kicking. A nice, swift ass-kicking of the alleged greatest Alabama team ever, of the alleged greatest college football team ever. Dabo did not just put a clown suit on Nick last night. He ran a lap around his program. He showed you also you don't have to be a miserable red ass who looks just as bitter winning by 28 as losing by 28 to be the best team in the country. And he planted Clemson's flag at the top of the college football mountain, and it's not going anywhere anytime soon. We know Clemson is here to stay. The question is that the beginning of the end of the Saban-Bama dynasty?
Nice, swift ass-kicking.
Pat 40 is my guest. Pat, happy new year. Good to have you. What's up?
Hey, Jim. Good to be with you.
Pat, it's great to have you here. Let me ask you about... You've seen a lot of things, Pat, but you're a little more than 12 hours away. You've had some time for it to sink in. What do you make of what you saw from Clemson and Alabama last night?
Well, it was stunning. I mean, I just didn't expect that kind of game. I thought it was going to be a close game, competitive. I thought Alabama would win, but I did think it was going to go down to the wire, and it did none of those things. Alabama did not win. Alabama got dominated. Clemson was brilliant. I think they go down in history as one of the great college football teams we've seen. And Alabama's got a little bit of soul searching to do. You know, I certainly don't think this is like the end of the run or anything like that for Nick Saban. But to see a Saban team fall apart like that in a moment like this was really shocking.
Pat 40 joining us. You know, Pat, I see it exactly the same way you do. I really thought that game would be close. I thought that Alabama would find a way to get it done. And as you point out, none of those things happened. So what impressed you more, how Clemson showed up on offense or how Brett Venables and the defense shut down Tua and the Alabama offense?
Boy, you know, I think I probably just the Clemson offense impressed me the most, just because I just can't get over Trevor Lawrence. And I mean, I've seen him play, and so I know how good he was, but true freshman to do the things that he has done is just unbelievable. I mean, he's as good a quarterback prospect as I've seen. He's got the size. He's got the unbelievable arm. He has accuracy. He makes the right reads. He doesn't throw the ball into trouble. It's amazing. And then those receivers and the plays they make. I mean, Clemson has kind of prided itself on becoming wide receiver U, and these guys are as good as they've had, and they've had a great run. I mean, Justin Ross and T. Higgins, both 6'4" monsters that can make these plays all over. And the thing is, they're all going to be back next year. So get ready for Clemson again in 2019.
Clones, give me a minute to talk to you about a new sponsor here for the Daily Jungle, Capterra. It's 2019. Are you still doing things the old way at work? New year, new you, right? So start the year off right by replacing that software that causes you angst and agony every single day. You know the one. You can find software that you love that fits your business's needs using Capterra.com. Capterra is the leading free online resource to help you find the best software solution for your business. With over 700,000 reviews of products, from real software users, discover everything you need to make an informed decision. Search more than 700 specific categories of software, everything from project management to email marketing to yoga studio management software and more. As an example, our business continues to grow and expand. We have over 200 affiliates that we have to stay in touch with. Capterra helps me do just that. Visit capterra.com/Rome for free today and find the right tools to make 2019 the year for your business. Capterra.com/Rome. Capterra, that's CAPTERRA.com/Rome.
Pat Forte joining us. You know, Pat, after the game, Dabo was talking about how it's just little old Clemson doing this. Obviously, everybody knows that that's not true. This is not little old Clemson anymore. But how exactly has Dabo gone about building this monster the way he has?
You know, I think he's taken Saban's page out of the playbook. I really think that he saw the way Saban built that program in terms of, you know, you ask for complete university commitment, all the facilities, all the analysts and support staff, so that you've got this humongous staff capable of, you know, doing every breakdown imaginable of film, doing, you know, every recruiting hit, you know, I mean, where you're gonna keep track of every player and you're gonna be in contact with them because you've got a staff big enough so you're not gonna miss on people. And then he's a great recruiter himself. You know, I mean, he has a great personality. He has a real zest for it. And he's gone into SEC states and gotten players. If you look, I mean, Trevor Lawrence is from Georgia. Justin Ross is from Alabama. T. Higgins is from, boy, is this, I think it's South Carolina. Travis Etienne is from Louisiana. He's going in and he's building an SEC program, basically.
We're talking to Pat Forte. You know, Pat, to your point, that Dabo has seen what Saban's done, and he's replicated a lot of that. He probably doesn't want to replicate what he saw last night. I mean, have you ever seen a Saban team that was outcoached and incompetent in a big game like that? And how did it all break down so quickly for Bama and Nick Saban?
Yeah, I have not. Never seen a Saban team perform that way. You know, it's his worst loss since 2004 when he was at LSU, and for it to happen here with the team that for a lot of the season looked invincible. But a couple of things, Jim. I think that there were cracks starting to show a little bit in Alabama as the season wore on, and maybe we just didn't pay enough attention. But in hindsight, now you can see them and say, aha, they didn't force a turnover in their last three games. That's very much unlike a Saban team. They got no real significant pressure last night on Lawrence. Their secondary was not great this year, and that was exposed. And then on the other side of it, while Tua had a ridiculously good season, and he's a great quarterback, he got careless and loose, and it burned him a couple of times. You know, he had the two bad interceptions against Georgia and two more last night. And I think there were plenty of times during the year when he probably made the wrong read, but either the defenses weren't good enough or his throws were so good that it didn't matter. But against these guys, you make a bad throw and it's a pick six or it's an interception. And so I think they had probably started to get a little bit sloppy, and it finally came back to burn them when they played somebody good enough to take advantage.
Well, we're talking to Pat Forte. You know, Pat, I'll go back to Clemson in 1 minute, but bottom line, what do you think, how do you think Saban and Bama respond to a game like this in the offseason? What's their offseason preparation going to be like, and what will their response be?
Well, yeah, I mean, it's going to be an incredibly intense off season, I would think. You know, the off season conditioning is going to be, whew, they've got all the motivational fuel to really go after their players. But secondly, I think there's going to be staff changes. You know, that's one thing, another element of this that I think probably went underrated. Clemson has had basically the same staff together throughout this run, whereas Alabama, it's been turnover. And largely that's because they've had so much success that people want to hire their assistants, but not completely. Some of these guys haven't been great at their jobs. And I think I wouldn't be shocked if there's a different defensive coordinator, maybe a different special teams coordinator next year. We know the offensive coordinator, Mike Locksley, is leaving to be the coach at Maryland. So Saban may look at his staff and say, hey, we've got to get better there too.
We're talking to Pat Forte for a couple of more moments. You know, Pat, back to Clemson staff and the point you just made. It wasn't just that Venables had this big game. The entire Clemson coaching staff had a huge game. At one point last night, co-offensive coordinator Tony Elliott was yelling, 2 of 3, and how about the ACC now? For those who don't really know him that well, what's he like as a person, and what's it say that he's the guy who was yelling that? In other words, how big of a chip on the shoulders is there for Clemson and their coaches about the ACC and who they are?
That's a really good point, because Tony Elliott is as polite and basically mild-mannered a guy as you're going to find. But, yeah, when they were walking through the press box on their way to the elevators to go down with, like, 2 minutes left in the game, they were woofing. And I do think that, yes, they had gone through this season and said, hey, we're undefeated, and nobody thinks we're that good because everybody thinks Alabama's so great, and, you know, the SEC gets the kind of by default respect. What about us here? We're killing everybody. And so for him to be talking like that, I think, was very instructive. And, yeah, he's a great coach, and I'm shocked he's not a head coach. He will be in the near future. And to have him and Brent Venables as the coordinators there for as long as they have is a remarkable coup for Clemson and for Dabo.
So, finally, Pat, as bad a night as that was for Saban and Alabama, what kind of odds would you put on there right now of there being a Clemson-Alabama 5 this time next year?
I'd say even money. I think there's a great chance that it happens again. They've got the best players coming back. They've got the best head coaches. They got, you know, Alabama's going to have the number one recruiting class coming in again. Clemson's going to have a great recruiting class coming in again. And I just look at the rest of the field and say these two teams are way ahead of everyone else. You know, Georgia probably is the next closest in terms of overall program strength. You could look at Oklahoma and Texas and say one of them, you know, could certainly get to the playoff, but could they beat one of these teams? Ohio State, Michigan say the same thing. Notre Dame say the same thing. And then the Pac-12's got a lot of proving to do as well. So I think it absolutely points toward Clemson-Bama 5 next year.
In sports, there are smart moves and some not-so-smart moves, like making sure you get to practice on time. That's smart. Parking in the coach's spot, not smart. The same is true when you're hiring. There are smart and not-so-smart ways to get things done, like job sites that overwhelm you with tons of the wrong resumes. That's not smart. The smart way? Letting ZipRecruiter find people with the right skills and actively inviting them to apply. It's why it's rated number one by employers in the U.S. based on Trustpilot rating of hiring sites with at least 1,000 reviews. And right now, you can try it for free at ZipRecruiter.com/clones. That's ZipRecruiter.com/clones, C-L-O-N-E-S. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire.
I want to be very clear about last night, though. Last night was not a changing of the guard. That was a storming of the gates. Again, Clemson did not just sneak that one out, did not eke that out with a last-second TD, did not pull away in the end for a 10-point win. Clemson beat the living crap out of the alleged best team in Bama history. I'm going to keep making that point. I can't make that point enough. So if you go 15-0 and you beat the best team in Bama history and arguably the alleged best team ever, once again, what then does that make you? I'll tell you what it makes you. It makes you a team that is not going anywhere anytime soon. Because as scary as Clemson was last night, here's the thing that ought to scare the hell out of college football overall. There were a hell of a lot of freshmen and sophomores doing that damage last night. I know that defensive line's got a lot of experience on it, and they're going to lose some underclassmen to the draft. But again, did you see Trevor Lawrence, 19 years old, and he turned Nick Saban's defense inside out? Absolutely picked them apart, shredded them.
no sacks, no turnovers. That hasn't happened to a Saban-Bama team in more than 130 games against Power 5 opponents. And yet Lawrence, a true freshman, made it look so easy. Dabo came on the show last week, and if you didn't hear it, he was talking about Trevor Lawrence.
Coaching him is like coaching Deshaun all over again from a mindset standpoint. I mean, it's just eerily similar. What makes them special early is their ability to absorb the playbook and the installation and just how quickly they adjust to the speed of the game and just the demeanor and poise under pressure. I mean, it's just such a step, and no moment just has been too big for him at all. I mean, just like when Deshaun came in here that first spring, immediately from a mental standpoint, you knew, man, this guy is gifted. And that's where we were with Trevor. The difference between Trevor and Deshaun is Trevor's 6'6", and he's 215, 16 pounds. And when Deshaun Watson got here, he was like 180 that January. And he was 200 by August. So he physically had more to develop. But mentally, their mindset, the makeup, the mentality, the poise, the demeanor, the focus, their ability to process and see it, and how they respond to a good play, a bad play, and the consistency in their preparation, that's what makes these guys unique.
He called that shot, didn't he? And if you didn't know it before, you know it now. And again, that was Dabo last week. That was not Dabo after the game last night. That was Dabo before the game. That was Dabo on this show last week. And that's the highest praise. Because Deshaun Watson, obviously, is the greatest quarterback in Clemson history. Was the greatest quarterback in Clemson history. I say that because it sure looks like Trevor Lawrence is about to rip that mantle. And he hasn't even started a full season yet. Trevor Lawrence, and here's why I say that. Trevor Lawrence, to me, does not look like Clemson Deshaun Watson. He looks like NFL Deshaun Watson. Never has a freshman looked so out of place in college football. And I mean that in the best way possible. I tweeted it last night. He looked like a grown-ass man going up against children. He's Zion Williamson in shoulder pads. And now he's got to stay two more years. He's got to stay two more years? College football coaches around the nation have got to be freaking out about that rule and looking to push for a waiver. And not just because it's ridiculously unfair to Lawrence that he's got to wait, but it's ridiculously unfair to college football that Lawrence has to wait. Former Clemson quarterback Taj Boyd, not a bad player at all, told The Athletic, quote, "Michael Phelps was literally born to swim. The kid got webbed feet, the whole thing. Short trunk, tall torso, he's built for it. I said, whatever Michael Phelps is to swimming, Trevor Lawrence is to throwing a football. Every freshman QB is bound to have a hiccup. This kid hasn't. I don't know if you call it a prodigy or a Bobby Fischer of chess, but Trevor Lawrence has got juice, and he has the it factor." I mean, that's a former great Clemson quarterback saying that. And he does have juice. He's got it by the barrel. I mean, did you see this pass to Justin Ross?
Lawrence just launches freshman versus freshman. And Ross makes a catch on the far sideline.
How about the touch on this throw?
How about it? And how about this other one to Ross?
Lawrence picks up the blitz, delivers, and is in another circus catch by Ross. Wow! Humongous play by the freshman.
What about Justin Ross? I mean, that's unfair. That's not okay. That's unacceptable. You're not supposed to be able to do things like that, and you're certainly not supposed to make it look easy or normal. And you want some more nightmare fuel, ACC defensive coordinators. Ross is a freshman. Travis Etienne, sophomore. Amari Rogers, sophomore. T. Higgins, sophomore. Isaiah Simmons, the leading tackler last night, sophomore. So to recap, everybody who scored or threw a touchdown is a freshman or a sophomore. But here's the scariest thing last night for everybody not wearing that paw on their helmet. Clemson expected it. You might not have expected it, but they did. They knew they were going to do that. They may have shocked America, but there was nobody in that locker room who was shocked at all. Defensive coordinator Brett Venables was not shocked by anything he saw. In fact, he was the one doing the shocking. He was the one who turned Tua inside out. turn them into knots. That pick six that started the whole thing off, no fluke. Venables told The Athletic, and I quote, "We had a little trap corner we thought might be there based on some stuff that Tua had done in the past. The corner read it great. We were in cloud coverage, something the Tigers haven't done too much of going into the game. It was huge right out of the gate. We came out in the first round. We gave him a couple of body blows, then hit him right in the chin." End quote. It's exactly what happened. Body blow, uppercut, uppercut, good night. Clemson was so good. So good, Christian Wilkins was giving Dabo a wet willy on the stage at the trophy presentation. They even slipped in a Suge Knight reference at the trophy presentation. You think that's going to happen with Bama, with Nick up there? That was not the act of a group that was surprised to be there. Did they look like they were surprised to be there? And according to another report, they chased all of that by playing Dixieland Delight on the bus back to the hotel. Troll Tide. And by the way, if you're an elite recruit, which program would you want to play for right now? The one with the coach who dances in the locker room and laughs all the time? Or the one who has the dude who looks miserable when he loses and even more miserable when he wins? They out-Bama'd Bama. They out-processed the process. They were the team that was calm in the moment that Bama's players and coaches were all freaking out. So, is this Clemson team the greatest team ever? I don't know. It's impossible to compare eras and all that. But I know what everybody would have called Bama if they won that game. So you better call Clemson that right now because they won it and because of the way they won it. And whether you want to call them that or not, just know that Clemson is sitting on top of the mountain and they are not going anywhere. Sam Amick is my guest. Sam, always good to have you on. How are you?
I'm good, Romy. How you doing, sir?
Good, good, Sam. Great to visit with you. Let me start with James Harden, Sam. He had 32 points. He had 14 assists in the win over the Nuggets last night. Sam, the way he's been playing lately, I feel like I should say only 32 because the guy's been that great. What do you make of what you've seen from Harden going back to that 50-point game against the Lakers in mid-December?
I mean, he's just playing with people, you know what I mean? And in a way that I honestly don't think I've ever seen from him, which is saying something. His MVP season last year was well-deserved. I voted for him. But as you know, a major part of that discussion was always about, you know, him getting to the line, him, you know, his kind of detractors would say tricking the refs and kind of scheming the game a little bit. And that's still a huge part of his game. But right now, more than ever before, I feel like we are seeing – you know, the step back on steroids, we're seeing the handle just be out of control. You know, the Warriors game last week that I was at, I don't know that I've ever seen the Warriors punked, so to speak, on their own home floor in a regular season game like that. I mean, he hit Klay Thompson with a step back and literally smacked him on the backside on the other way down the floor. He had words for Draymond when he was on the ground, when he just couldn't, you know, stop what James is trying to do. I mean, his level of domination is absurd right now.
Sam Amick joining us. That is so true. I have never seen anything like that happen to this group of Golden State Warriors. You know, and again, if you don't like the guy going to the line, as James Harden points out himself, Sam, stop fouling me. You went to the Rockets locker room after that game. As you pointed out, early January wins are not supposed to inspire much in the way of celebration. How would you describe that locker room after that game?
Yeah, they were fired up. I mean, it was somewhat measured. Honestly, the guy who was probably more excited than anybody was Daryl Morey, the Rockets GM. And he's been pretty transparent about the fact that he's obsessed with beating the Warriors. And like he clarified, he says, "I'm obsessed with, you know, winning a championship, and the Warriors in this era are always in the way." And so Daryl was interesting to watch because he was walking over and talking to Clint Capella after he had a huge night. He's going over and thanking Austin Rivers, and then, you know, Austin was thanking Daryl, saying, "What are you thanking me for? You're the one who signed me, and now I'm a part of a championship contender." You know, walking over to James, talking to him. The funny thing was, Daryl and I were talking, and James was about to leave for the night. He walks through the tunnel, and Daryl kind of, you know, left our conversation pretty abruptly and wanted to go make sure that he said goodbye to the man of the hour on James's way out the door. I mean, you know, so there's some backslapping and some celebration, but not too much. The thing to me that really struck me was that psychologically they just seemed to not have that same level of ear, if you will, of the Warriors, and their level of confidence is different than it was even early last year.
Sam Amick joining us. I'll get to Golden State in a minute. But, Sam, one more thought about the Rockets. It was not that long ago that they lost key pieces in the offseason. They were parting ways with Carmelo Anthony. They'd gotten off to a terrible start, and they turned it around, and they've done it without Chris Paul. How have they done it? What changed?
Well, I'm shocked. First of all, I always try to like be one of those media people who make sure that they call themselves on them when they get stuff wrong. I mean, I had a column about the MVP race 3.5 weeks ago, roughly a month ago, and how LeBron had a great crack at it. And I had a throwaway line about James Harden and essentially said, well, you know, the Rockets are a mess, so for now, James is out. Well, I mean, you know, how wrong was that? That got turned around real quick. And team-wide, the stuff that has changed is, for one, P.J. Tucker, like last night, knocking down threes, showing, you know, we know what he does defensively, accurate shooter on the other end. Austin Rivers is the unlikeliest of stand-ins for Chris Paul. We all know the backstory and the drama between the Clippers and the Rockets, some secret tunnels and animosity between Austin and these Rockets players, and now all of a sudden he's actually a very important piece for them. And even last night, he goes 1 of 7 against Denver, offensively struggled, his worst game out of the seven with Houston. But he's a pretty good defender, and he slows down a Jamal Murray. He can kind of try to slow down a Damian Lillard, a Steph Curry, guys like that. You know, from there, you've got Daniel House, nice hometown story with Houston roots, doing really good things for the Rockets. Gerald Green still doing his thing. Clint Capella continuing to get better. So they found their way. The defense has gotten better with Jeff Fizdelic, their defensive guru assistant coach, back. And I'm pretty shocked with how quickly they've kind of evolved and gotten this thing back on track.
Sam Amick, senior NBA writer for The Athletic, joining us. All right, Sam, what about Golden State? To your point that Houston's no longer or not as intimidated, perhaps, as they were by Golden State, when you look at this Golden State squad, what do you see?
I don't know what to make of it. At least for now, I'm standing in that camp that says, if I got to handicap it, I still think they get the job done, and we're probably looking at a three-peat. But with a major kind of capital B, I don't like the spirit of the group. You know, they kind of, you know, rewrote the book on basketball joy within these last couple of years. And that element is just not there. And Steph Curry in particular has talked at length about how internally they've had a lot of conversations about rediscovering themselves and kind of finding that joy. And they're trying, and they just aren't. And, you know, style of play has been a little herky-jerky. You know, offensively, you've got the constant conversation about Kevin Durant and the way he functions within the context of the Warriors offense. You know, they're not moving the ball like they've been known to do the last couple of years. And the defense is mediocre. I think they're 16th in defensive rating. Health has come into play. We know that Steph was on the shelf for a long time. And Draymond, you know, I think this is probably underreported and talked about. He just hasn't been feeling in tip-top shape physically. And so defensively, not the same guy for most of this season. And then offensively, his three-pointer just disappeared, and he's just not a threat whatsoever. You know, Clay also struggling. So a lot of layers to it. But again, it's just, I've learned the hard way to not doubt these guys when we're sitting here in January.
Sam Amick joining us here in the jungle. All right, Sam, before you go, another big topic. In fact, one of the biggest stories of the NBA season so far, the future of Anthony Davis. Starting with Davis himself, based on your reporting, what is your sense of how Davis feels about New Orleans and his future with the Pelicans?
Well, it's tricky because, as always, you have, you know, I try to respect, like, the players to the extent to where you, you know, the voice and the message ultimately has to come from them. But they all have agents, they all have camps, and they all have kind of messaging that surrounds them. So the messaging with Anthony and his future, I mean, I would sit here and say I would be stunned if he was in New Orleans, you know, at certainly at the end of this contract, and I would probably expect him to be in a different jersey by next season. Now, AD himself, and he talked to R.J. Varden at The Athletic just the other day, continues to reiterate that he's invested in this New Orleans team, trying to get them to that next level. His numbers show that. The guy's effort and production is through the roof. But considering that his parameters are not only wanting to win, but to have a legacy, be a champion, and far more important than money, which is what I reported a couple weeks ago, that, you know, that fifth year that the Pelicans can offer him this summer is essentially of no consequence to him. It's not a factor. That's not going to keep him in New Orleans. And so if that's his goal, that's his mindset, I just really don't see how the Pelicans keep him in town.
We're talking to Sam Mamick for a few more moments. All right, so where does that leave LeBron James and the Lakers? Because, Sam, LeBron obviously has made no secret of the fact that he would like to play with Davis. They have the same agent. And as you point out, he's not going to be a free agent until 2020. And the Pelicans have made it very clear they do not want to trade him right now. That said, we're less than a month away from the NBA trade deadline. So, Sam, if you're the Lakers, what do you do now?
Well, I get the strong sense that, you know, LeBron and his folks would be more than happy to kind of unofficially greenlight a very aggressive offer for AD right now. And the fascinating part of the timing element here is that Boston is kind of handicapped in the AD sweepstakes until – not a kind of, they are handicapped until this summer because they have Kyrie on a designated player extension, you know, the Supermax. They cannot have AD on their team. So Boston being the number one rival in terms of assets and potential trade suitor for AD to the Lakers, you can make a strong argument that now is the time to put a bunch of those young pieces on the table and go for it and get AD to town so that Boston doesn't end up getting them this summer. I don't have any intel or reason to think right now that they are taking that kind of path. The young guys are not helping their trade value last couple of games. You know, with LeBron out, they've been really scuffling. Last night was a good win. But, you know, that part doesn't help when Lonzo struggles, when Brandon Ingram struggles, and, you know, Kyle Kuzma's been hurt. But, you know, I think that's where it's at right now. I certainly don't know where it's going to wind up, though.
You know, one last thought. It looked like for a while that it was a foregone conclusion that Paul George was going to end up with the Lakers, and of course that did not happen. He decided to stay with OKC. You've had some really insightful pieces, I think, on Paul George over the years. What do you make of how he's feeling about life in Oklahoma City right now?
He feels great. I caught up with him recently. You know, basically, what's fascinating is that I think by signing that four-year deal with the Thunder, player option in the fourth year, but a long-term contract, you're already seeing kind of what comes with that when it comes to the on-court dynamic. And a guy like in Russell Westbrook, who we all know is about as, you know, kind of reluctant to give up the reins as maybe any star in the NBA, but to Russ's credit, he's been yielding a lot more this season. I think partly because, you know, Paul could have bounced. Paul could have left, and instead he not only came back, but he didn't come back in a Kevin Durant kind of coming back where it's a one-year deal every time out, or LeBron. He went ahead and said, I'm going to be here. And so, you know, in terms of ball handling, usage rate, playmaking, Paul has got the ball a lot more this year. He's having an MVP caliber year. His defense is fantastic. They have the number one defense in the entire NBA. He's a major part of that, so he's playing some great ball.
Last night is going to leave a mark on Nick Saban. A week at the Lake House watching the Weather Channel and smashing Little Debbie's is not going to erase that beating. And here's a serious question that I haven't yet posed that I want to get into. Can the greatest of all time really be the greatest of all time if he's beaten like that on the biggest stage? Again, going into last night, it was essentially an accepted fact that Nick Saban was the greatest college coach of all time. But can you really be the GOAT if you get absolutely wrecked like that in a national championship game? Because it's not like he scotch-taped his way through the season and somehow found a way to win 14 games to get there. This was, again, the alleged greatest team in Alabama history. And that's a history that's got a lot of very good teams. He has the Heisman runner-up at quarterback. He has at least three NFL running backs in his backfield. He has elite talent all over that roster. You know, the team that was supposed to be so good they could give the Buffalo Bills or the Arizona Cardinals a game. Not just give them a game, but maybe beat them. Remember that? Neither do I. Oh, and speaking of the Bills, the last time Nick Saban lost a game that badly, it was at the hands of the Buffalo Bills when J.P. Lossman lit him up for a 21-0 win back in 06. So Saban and Bama were exposed last night. Everywhere you thought they had a strength, Clemson was stronger. Clemson was more physical. Clemson was tougher. Clemson was smarter. Clemson was more athletic. Clemson was more explosive. Clemson was more composed. They were more poised. A true freshman absolutely destroyed Nick Saban's bread and butter, his defense. Nick Saban is a defensive backs coach by trade, but Trevor Lawrence and Justin Ross and that company had them on roller skates all night long. I mean, for a while, I couldn't tell if that was Nick Saban's Alabama or Mike Shula's Alabama. Saban, try to explain after the game exactly what happened.
You know, we actually stopped the run pretty well and created enough third down situations. We just couldn't get off the field on third down. We couldn't capitalize on our opportunities that we had on offense.
Hey, Nick. Wrong answer. It was not just about the defense not being able to get off the field on third down. They dominated you everywhere. You lost that game by 4 touchdowns, Nick. That's not just third downs. You can throw the stats out the window on that. You know, maybe you're thinking that it was close based on stats, but you'd be completely wrong. If you're looking at the box score and trying to argue that that game was close, then you're desperate. And Nick was desperate almost all night long. Alabama v. Clemson last night was like Alabama v. Notre Dame 6 years ago. Only this time, Bama played the role of Notre Dame. And Notre Dame this year, by the way, did a better job against Clemson than Alabama did. For the final 3 quarters of that game, Bama had no business being on the same field as Clemson. Seriously, that's how enormous that gap was. And it wasn't just about Trevor Lawrence outplaying Tua or Clemson winning the battle in the trenches, on both sides of the trenches, or Clemson's receivers making Bama's secondary look like amateurs. What I'm getting at is the biggest gap between these two teams was between the head coaches. Dabo Swinney coached circles around Nick Saban. Dabo seemed to know everything that was going to happen before it happened. Saban had no idea what was happening. So why don't we deconstruct this a little bit more? Nick Saban is a freakish half from Tua away from having lost 2 straight national title games in embarrassing fashion. Easy to forget right now, but going to Tua last year was a desperate roll of the dice. It came up perfectly, but that wasn't some brilliantly crafted game plan to keep his best player on the bench all season long, only to break him out when they were in huge trouble against Georgia. That was desperation. Just like last night's fake field goal was desperation. And speaking of fakes, Saban in Alabama might have been an idiotic Georgia fake punt away from not even being in the playoffs. So I'm really not interested in hearing the arguments about how Saban's coaching staff is the weakest that it's been in a long time and that that's what that's all about. Again, the guy's got like what, 300 coaches? How many former head coaches does this guy have around him as coordinators, assistants, advisors, consultants, whatever job titles he wants to hand out? If one guy's not doing his job, there are like 40 others who can take the place. And secondly, by the way, I didn't hear that argument or that complaint about that staff throughout the entire year. So don't come in here right now, now that he got embarrassed, and blame his assistants. I didn't hear that once during the year. This is not on the coaching staff. I mean, sure, Mike Locksley didn't exactly dial up a masterpiece on offense, but nobody was saying how badly he sucked when he won the Broyles Award as the top assistant in the country only a few weeks back. So this argument that it's the weakest coaching staff that he's had feels like an after-the-fact argument from people who want to cover themselves for getting this Bama team so wrong. I mean, I get it, because everybody was so wrong. Everybody got them wrong. Everybody got Saban wrong this year. Like, remember when Nick Saban was the Nicktator? Just a machine who rattled off win after win. The Nick Saban who showed up in the semifinal and the title game was not that. This Nick Saban was unhinged, smashing headsets, F-bombing officials, losing his mind at players when they were beating Oklahoma. A lot of coaches get criticized for how they handle themselves on the sideline, but for some reason, Saban always slides on that. But this guy looked like a lunatic repeatedly in the last couple of games. Clayton Gathers is my guest. Clayton, nice to have you back on this show. How are you?
I'm doing great. How about yourself?
Man, I'm great. It's great to visit with you. Let me get you to go back to last week before we talk about this weekend. You have 31 guys on the team making their playoff debut on Saturday. It's a lot of guys without playoff experience, but you all seem to show up like you'd been there before. How do you explain how comfortable everybody was in a pressure situation like that where they had not been before?
Just keep the main thing the main thing. Just pretty much go out and every guy do their job, you know. Don't let it get too big. You know, just stay even keel. And, you know, once you're playing together, you know, everybody has won. That's a good thing.
All right, now you had a huge game with 9 tackles. You had a pass defense. How different is the atmosphere in a playoff game versus a regular season game? And what did it mean to you to show up the way you did in a game that mattered that much?
Oh, it's big. It's big, you know. Just to have the opportunity to be out there, you know, and that just says a lot about the team and the character that's on this team, you know. So just going out last week, just trying to do everything I can to help the team win, and I think everybody had the same mindset. So that's what helped.
You know, you look at it, like Marlon Mack, he rushed for nearly 150 yards, and then on defense, yeah. You guys had 3 sacks, and you had 8 quarterback hits. When you're punishing a team physically the way you did on both sides of the ball, does it start to take the toll on your opponent, and do you see them maybe not wanting to get hit after a while?
I believe so. You know, we preach on defense, you know, just flying around to the ball and, you know, just doing your job. And everybody feeds off that, you know, big hits, picks, you know, it's contagious, you know, and it's fun to watch and it's fun to be a part of.
We're talking to Clayton Gethers. You know, one of the things that's really striking to me about the team is you've turned this thing around after a 1-5 start. And it's not just the turnaround, but from the outside, it seemed like nobody panicked when you guys got off to that start. It seemed like you guys really were confident that you were going to get squared away and get it turned around. Almost nobody turns around a season like that. So where did that confidence come from? How did you know it was going to be all right?
Just believing in yourself, believing in your teammates, and it's all about trust, you know, and it's all about the team. Nobody's bigger than the team, and, you know, just coming together and playing for one another and, you know, just holding people accountable, holding yourself accountable, because you don't want to let the next man down. You don't want to let your teammates down, and everybody got that same mindset, so it's good when it gels like that, and it's fun.
You know, when you talk about trust, it's got to start at the top, right? A lot of people outside the locker room only know about Frank Reich from his days as a player. Maybe they don't fully appreciate him as a head coach. For those who do not know him, how would you describe Frank Reich?
A guy that's going to be the same day in and day out. He's consistent, demands respect, and that's easy to follow. You know, that's easy to gravitate towards, and that's what happened. That's what happened. He came in, he's the same guy since day one. And, you know, the guys love that, you know, so it's easy to follow.
Hey, Clayton, what's he like? For instance, I mean, we're talking about a guy who was a pastor. He does not curse. He does not yell or raise his voice necessarily. He's not going to get up in your grill. I mean, it seems almost counterintuitive when guys are used to being coached so hard. What's it like to play from him from that standpoint where he's not going to approach it that way?
You know, he knows everybody got a job to do. He's going to treat you like a man, and he's going to treat you with respect. And he demands respect. And like I said, you know, just a guy to be a good guy to be around. You know, everybody loves him. Everybody loves to be around him. And he's going to talk to you. And, you know, it's good to be around him. So I'm happy he's our coach.
Clayton Gethers joining us. I got you. That makes sense. Listen, he also said this about the defense. Your coach did, quote, "You hear people say, we don't have a bunch of Pro Bowl players. A big-name player," end quote. So is there any part of you that's bothered by the fact that the defense doesn't get a ton of love nationally and that you're not household names, at least not yet?
You know what? We block out the noise. And we know we have in the room. We know we have in this building. And we just block out the noise and keep playing, keep executing, playing for one another, you know, and all that will come. You know, we just trust in the process and keep going out there each week and display that, you know. So that's where we at.
All right, see, that makes sense. But then if somebody can explain this to me, I'm looking at your teammate Darius Leonard. I'm looking at the year he had, and he was a Pro Bowl snub. I understand that happens every single year to deserving guys. But in his case, how is that even possible? How do you miss on a guy like that?
You know what? I don't know how you missed on that. I really don't. You know, it's kind of upsetting and it's kind of disrespectful. But, you know, he keeps the same approach. And, you know, he took the same approach. He took it personally, and so is everyone else on his defense. So, you know, we just playing for one another, and we just going to keep it going.
And you got the next challenge coming up. You got Kansas City. So now you're facing Patrick Mahomes. When you watch him on film, what sticks out to you the most?
Good quarterback, elite offense. You know, he can get the ball out. He keeps the plays alive. So, you know, it's a good challenge this week. The game's going to be fun. You know, we just got to go out there and execute our defense. We have to go out there and execute what we do. So that's the main thing.
I'm not looking for you to give away any secrets, but how do you go about stopping this guy or slowing him down? What's the key to having success against that offense?
Again, you know, they do a lot of things. And you look on film, you know, you got guys, you know, all their receivers are really fast. They got good backs. And, you know, like I said before, it's just going about doing what we do week in and week out. We have to worry about us. We have to worry about executing our play calls and continue to do what we've been doing. And that's flying around to the ball.
Flying around to the ball and keeping the main thing, Indianapolis at Kansas City. It is a Saturday game. Safety Clayton Gethers, my guest. Clayton, I know it's a really busy week. Great to have you back on the show. Thanks so much.
Yes, thanks for having me.
Let's go to the phones from the sick bay. Adam, what's up, man? How you feeling?
What's up, Jim? I'm feeling a lot better. You know, hearing your voice, good to be in the jungle. How's everything?
Things are, they're all right. I mean, they're fine here because we're here doing our jobs. Listen, man, walk this thing back for me. When did you first start feeling sick, and what did you feel like?
Okay, it came on Sunday night, 8 o'clock, like just, it was insane what had happened. I started getting lightheaded and dizzy, and I was like, whoa, this is insane. Like, I can barely keep my balance standing up. And I had no idea what was happening. And I told my wife, I was like, "Hey, I think I'm about to yak." And she was like, "What? No, you're not. You fake everything. You're a hypochondriac. You're an exaggerator. There's no way." And then, sure enough, I went to the toilet and yacked. And I had never been happier because I was finally proven to not be a liar for the first time in my life. And I just got sick as hell, and it was insane. And couldn't eat or hold anything down for a while. Had no idea what was going on. And then the exact same thing started happening to my 2.5-year-old daughter. And then I went from being happy to very, very worried that something was going around the house. And, you know, my wife is 9 months pregnant. So it got really dicey there. And then I tried to tough it out Monday morning and, like, almost lost consciousness in the shower, which, you know, it's a nice sight for everyone listening. And then I had to send that terrible email letting you guys know that I wasn't going to make it in on Monday, and then went to the doctor's last night, and he told me what was going on and told me to take Tuesday off, and I'm excited to get back Wednesday.
All right, so Adam Hawk joining us. Adam, are you sure that this was not a result of you not necessarily having the flu, but rather that 12-mile walk you had?
All right, so I do want to talk about that for a second. There's a whole karma thing in play here. A lot of people, you know, they like to laugh at how stupid I am, but I feel like I lost a lot of favor when I told that story about jobbing that sales lady, and then all of a sudden people laughing at me turned into
Adam, you can't lose what you didn't have. You cannot lose what you did not have. You had no favor left at that point. You had no goodwill in the bank left at that point. What little you had left, you probably did lose. You're right, but go ahead.
So, yeah, people went from, okay, he's kind of a stupid idiot, to I hate this guy. I want him to throw his back out. I want bad things to happen to him. And sure enough, you know, I went for an 11.5-mile run, which is a personal best, no big deal. And I was getting clowned for how long it took me to run it. And I did some trolling on the internet, and I said, fueled by great savings, which was a reference to the half-off shoes I got after jobbing that sales lady. And people were like, dude, I hate you so much. I really want bad things to happen to you. And then the very next day, I got a stomach virus, and bad things did happen to me, and bad things happened to my family. And so anyone that was rooting for terrible things to happen to me, you guys win. The karma got me. The karma got me real good. What else can I say?
Yeah, how do you all feel about yourselves now? I mean, it's one thing to talk a little bit of junk, but all of a sudden when there's that much vitriol and venom involved, I mean, come on, clones, back off. All right, so where does this leave you? Are you on meds right now? Do you really think you're going to come in tomorrow? What's your status?
Okay, I'm 100% coming in tomorrow, no doubt. I've made the turn. I'm on anti-nausea meds. They're these dissolving pills that you just put under your tongue, and it helps you keep stuff down. I've now been able to eat 3 saltine crackers and drink half of a Gatorade. I'll have everyone know that I've lost 7 pounds, which is awesome. I'm very happy about that, very happy about how I look right now. And our daughter is doing better as well. I'm coming back tomorrow, Jim, because I have watched 50 episodes of Paw Patrol and PJ Masks. And if I have to watch one more of those stupid kid cartoons, I'm going to go insane. So there will be no more stay-at-home dad jokes on this show, because stay-at-home dads, that is a tough, tough gig. You've been right all along, Jim. It's the harder gig. And shout out to my wife who's had to deal with two sick babies. I'm calling myself a baby. And then the cat just threw up three times on the rug, too. So it's been a terrible 2 days for her.
All right, two last things really quickly. Number one, I'm glad that you want to come back tomorrow, but are you contagious? Because if so, don't you bring it around here. Don't come around here if you're contagious.
Okay, so I did ask the doctor very first thing. I said, I work for a really awesome guy, celebrity. Am I contagious? And he said, no, you're not contagious. You can go back in a few days. And I said, that's great. Awesome. He'll want to have me back really bad. So I'm glad I get to tell him that. And then, so
that's
I'm not
true.
I'm not bringing any germs back to the office, guaranteed.
Okay, that's good to know. That's good to know. But, Jay, Adam, I got to say, I mean, dude, to be totally respectful, you sound better than normal. You sound perfectly healthy. You sound like you just had a 2-day vacation.
Yeah, and I can see where anyone listening would totally feel that way and that I'm pulling some kind of Ferris Bueller. If I put the phone up to my stomach right now, it'd be a completely different story. This has no effect over how I sound. It's all in how I feel. And like I said, I'm turning the corner. This is not me, you know, faking to get out of work. I wouldn't want to get out of work coming off of a NFL playoff Sunday and a college football national championship game, despite the fact I have no idea what happened in any of those games, and I don't really know that sport that well. I would have loved to have heard you talk about it, so I would have loved to have been there, you know?
Wow, dude. You don't know what – wait, you can't watch TV? You were too sick to watch the games?
Well, here's the thing. I tried watching the games, but I was losing the battle to a sick kid who wanted to watch PJ Masks and the Paw Patrol. And if anyone has a 2-year-old at home, they know exactly what I'm talking about. It was a very, very tough uphill battle that I ended up losing.
Fair enough. All right. So listen, get some rest. Stay on your meds. See you tomorrow. Way to play through it. Way to grind it out. Way to be a tough guy, Adam.
Thank you. And thank you to all the clones for, you know, motivating me to get out there and run on my 50% off shoes. I can't wait to do it again next weekend. And I'll update you guys on the mileage as well.
All right. See you tomorrow morning, Adam. Stay strong.
See you, Jim.
See ya. Adam Hawk, Sick Bay. You know what? Let's go to Little Rock. Let's go to Little Rock, Arkansas. John in Little Rock. Happy New Year, brother. What's up?
Happy New Year, Jimmy! You know, I think that on the Bama sideline that they need a Lawrence machine to lead the monkey-ass team just to hide the scheme. Yeah! You need a Lawrence. What? Need a Lawrence. You need a Lawrence. What? Need a Lawrence.
That's not a good call. No.
You don't like that call.
I don't like that call. Not a very
You need call. A Lawrence. You need a Lawrence machine. John in Little Rock. Hey, John, I stayed with you as long as I possibly could. You might as well jump,
Bakersfield.
John.
Bakersfield.
Manny in Baco. Central Cali. What's going on, Manny? How are you? And now Manny's gone. Are we really still doing this? This far into this game, are we still doing this? Are we really still having people who are confused by the radio and the phone and the delay? I haven't heard that happen in a long time. Let's go to Sacramento quickly. Ken, good to have you, Ken. What's up?
Hey, Rumi, thanks for the vibe. Listen, I am so glad that this puts, hopefully, an end to all this talk about a great Alabama team that can beat the weakest pro team that's playing. People seem to forget, everybody on the Arizona Cardinals is already an NFL player. You got a bunch of guys in Alabama that wish they are going to be NFL players. And by the way, they played a number one future draft choice, best player in the draft. He's going to be the number one player taken. Might as well put a $25 million insurance policy on this cat because that's what's coming to him the day he decides he's going pro. And by the way, Romy, those other skilled players that you talk about, those other freshmen and sophomore, that is the first time I've ever seen Alabama look up and see a team with the skilled position players equal, if not better, than the ones they possess. You do not look up on this and recognize that this Clemson team, they sat back all over the couple of weeks listening to everybody talk about how great Alabama was, just grinning. They knew what they had. they knew they had a once-in-a-lifetime quarterback that when he's on stage, nobody is going to beat this team. And quite frankly, I don't expect anybody to beat this team until this kid leaves. With the talent around him, man, it's going to be wonderful to see. Thanks, Romy. I'm out.
You got it, Ken. Thank you very much. Rakim Berea starting us off. Good to have you, Dave. How are you?
Rome, what a time to be alive, brother. My goodness, it has never felt so good to be so hungover, tired on a Tuesday. I tell you, man, it is insane, dude. Clemson Nation has been fed all season long, all year long. They're world beaters, man. They can beat anybody. Clemson don't belong. They play in this weak conference. It's terrible. They don't belong. I've just got one question, Bama and haters. How's that grab you? What you need to worry about is your dadgum coach over there on the sidelines looking like Blanche from the Golden Girls. Okay, here we go. Unwar ESPN and SEC haters and bias and war me and my Clemson Tigers. Deuces.
That's not a good call. No.
Hey, Dave, you know, you're a solid enough tweeter. I know you're a Clemson grad. I know it's a big day for you. I tried to give you a little bit of room to land that plane, and you still couldn't do it. I give you a lot of rope, my man, a lot of rope, because it's a big day. I'm trying to be here for you.
Good night now.